Okay. Let me first pose a question, which I'm going to answer during the talk. So question one. How many solutions are there to a polynomial system with polynomials in two variables, p of x, y, 0 and q of x, y, 0? And the polynomials can be arbitrary. So let's say p is something like x plus 1 squared plus y squared minus 4, and q is x minus 1 squared plus y squared minus 4. Okay, so this is the main question of the talk. And so first I want to reformulate this question. So this is an algebraic question. This is something about polynomials. Let me say a priori a different question. So how many intersection points do two plane curves have? Okay, so what's the relation between these two questions? Well, you can look at the zero set of this polynomial. So the zero set of this polynomial, so you have x plus 1 squared plus y squared is 4. So this is a circle. And you can draw these two circles. One of them is centered is here, the other one is here. And I suppose they look like this. This one is something like this. And you see there are two intersection points. And these intersection points precisely correspond to the common solutions to the system. Okay. And now this is a geometric question. And this interplay between algebra, polynomials, and geometry, curves or surfaces in the plane or higher dimensions, this is what algebraic geometry studies. And let me just give some basic definitions in algebraic geometry. Okay, so let me start with the field. So K will be a field. And if you don't know what a field is, it's fine. You can think about real numbers. You can think about complex numbers, rationals, or algebraic numbers or something else. Just any field you know. And an affine plane . This is denoted by boldface A2. It's the set of points x, y, where x and y are in the field K. So for example, if K is just R, then the affine plane is just R2. So it's something two-dimensional. For K, C, you get C2, so it has four real dimensions, and so on. You can talk about any field here. Okay. So next, I want to define a plane curve. An affine plane curve. So A2 is just a set. So let me consider a subset C of A2. Given as a zero set of a single polynomial, p of x, y, 0. So this is what an affine plane curve is. Okay, so what are examples of affine plane curves? Well, here's one example. If you have a circle, so P is x squared plus y squared minus 1. So this is a circle over the reals. Over complex numbers, it will be something more involved. Then you can also look at lines, just 3x plus 2y minus 5. So this is going to be a line. And now these questions apply to affine plane curves. So we want to look at two affine plane curves, and we want to find their intersection points. Okay. So the simplest kind of polynomial you can consider is a linear polynomial, and the simplest curve is a line. So let's first understand this question, the question 1 and 2 for lines. So for lines, it's simple. So there are three cases. Two lines can either be the same line, so just both equations give you the same line, which means that the corresponding polynomials are just proportional to each other. So that's not something interesting. Well, and there are infinitely many intersection points, so it's boring. Well, the second case is lines are parallel to each other. Let me say that here you have infinitely many points of intersection. Now, in the second case, you have two parallel lines. And there are no intersection points. And finally, a generic case would be when the slopes are different. This is a generic case. When you have two lines and they have different slope. Then there's a single intersection point. Okay, so this looks simple for lines, but now if you go to higher degree polynomials, you might not know even a priori how many points there can be. Okay, but let's talk about lines first. So you cannot do anything with case one, you just have the same line. And you cannot count the intersection points. There are infinitely many of them. Now, case two, so you have two lines. Well, it looks like they don't intersect, but you might think that they intersect, but just at infinity. So let me explain this point, in what sense they can be made intersect at infinity. So consider two lines. One of them is the x-axis. So this is P. Is just y, and the other line is ax plus y minus 1, and a is some number. So let's look at the intersection of these two lines. So the intersection point will have the y-coordinate 0, and if y is 0, then the x-coordinate will be 1 over a. This is the intersection point. So the picture on. So you have your x-axis. And now the second line, ax plus y minus 1 is 0. Well, it passes through the point x equals to 0, y equals to 1, and it goes something like this. And here is the intersection point. This point is 1 over a, 0. OK. But now let's consider the case when a gets smaller and smaller. So let's consider the limit as a goes to 0. In this limit, the point goes to infinity, and the lines become parallel. And so this intersection point goes off to infinity. And in some sense, the lines still intersect, but at infinity. So I'd like to make this concept precise. Let's see. And what could I possibly mean by that, that the lines intersect at infinity? Well, you know that the lines don't intersect, so parallel lines. Don't intersect in the plane, so in the affine plane A2, but they might intersect in some bigger space. In certain space, I will denote by boldface P2, containing this A2. So I want to explain what P2 is. Any questions so far?
Yep. 1 over a, 0 for that one intersection.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let me define this P2. So projective plane denoted by P2 is the set of three numbers, A, semicolon, B, colon, C. So instead of just writing A, B, C, I will denote by square brackets and by colons here. So you have three numbers, where A, B, and C are some numbers in your field, some real numbers or some complex numbers, up to rescaling. A goes to alpha A, B goes to alpha B, C goes to alpha C. So up to simultaneous rescaling. And I'm assuming that A, B, and C are not zero at the same time. So the point 0, 0, 0 is not in P2. Okay, so this is what I mean by the projective plane. Let me first explain why it's even two-dimensional in some sense. Why did I put a 2 here? Well, there are three numbers. Well, you start with three numbers, A, B, and C, and then you identify A, B, C, and the point alpha A, alpha B, alpha C. So this kills off one of the dimensions. So instead of three-dimensional space, you get a two-dimensional space. And let me explain how this looks like, why in some sense it's a plane. So let me consider the subset given by the equation C not equal to 0 in A, B, and C, in P2. So if you have A, B, C, and C is not 0, you can rescale everything by 1 over C. So this point is the same as the point A over C, B over C, and C over C, which is 1. So these two points are the same. And you see that the subset C not equal to 0 is parameterized by just two numbers, A over C and B over C. So these are the parameters. And the set, which is parameterized by just two numbers, is what I call the affine plane. So the set is isomorphic to the affine plane. So what I've just shown is that the projective plane contains the affine plane. Now let's look at the complement, how the complement looks like. Well, the complement is the set of points where C is 0, so you cannot divide by C anymore. Okay, so that means we have points A, B, 0. Now, instead of three variables, we have the same definition with two variables. So it's natural to call this not an affine plane P2, but a projective line. So this is known as projective line P1. So just the set of two points up to a simultaneous rescaling. Okay. So what I've shown is that P2 decomposes as a disjoint union of A2, the affine plane, and P1, a projective line. Now, how does P1 look like? So let's consider some simple cases. First of all, case R. So you can do the same decomposition by looking at the one of the variables is not 0, this set. So for P1, you look at the set where B is not 0. And you can also write P1 as a disjoint union of A1, which is just K, just one number in the field, and P0, which is a point. So P1 is a line plus a point. So for the real numbers, you get a line and a point at infinity, so you get a circle plus a point. This is a circle. And there is the point at infinity. For k, the complex numbers, so you get a plane, and you get a point to a plane at infinity. If you compactify it in this way, you get a sphere. And here's the point at infinity. Okay. So this is how P1 looks like. And you should think of P2 as being affine plane, and there's some P1 sitting at infinity. So the lines before didn't intersect in A2, but they will intersect in P2. There will be an intersection in this P1 sitting in infinity. Okay. So before I explain that, let me explain what it even means to have a curve in P2. So if you have a polynomial equation, some polynomial P of A, B, C, and this is equal to 0, this doesn't quite make sense for arbitrary p, because we can rescale a, b, and c, and we'll get a different polynomial. So a single polynomial will give you several constraints. So to get rid of that, we'll consider some special polynomials, which under rescaling, rescale by some power. So if you rescale each variable by the same number, then this number comes out to some power. So these are called homogeneous polynomials. So for example, p is equal to a squared plus b squared minus c squared is homogeneous. So if you multiply everything by alpha, you'll get alpha squared. But p equal to a squared plus b squared minus c cubed is not homogeneous. So here you'll get an alpha squared, and here you'll get an alpha cubed. So there's no single power you can pull out. Okay. And these are the only kind of polynomials that we will consider to define projective curves. So now let me give a definition of a projective curve.
Yeah. So to, like a non-homogeneous polynomial, an affine plane, does it extend to a homogeneous one?
Yeah, I'm about to say that. Let me first define what a projective curve is, and then I'll say that. It's a very good point. So a projective curve is a subset of P2 given as the zero set of a homogeneous polynomial. Now, let me address that question. So what happens if you have a polynomial of two variables, let's say x to the 5 plus 3y squared? Now, this is not a homogeneous polynomial, and it only has two variables. So how do we make this into a homogeneous polynomial? Well, let me also add some constant, minus 6. So the way we're going to make this into a homogeneous polynomial, we'll replace x by a over c, and we'll replace y by b over c. So a, b, c are the coordinates on the projective plane, P2. Okay, so if you do this substitution, you'll get a to the fifth over b over c to the fifth power plus 3 b squared over c squared minus 6. So this polynomial is still, well, this is not even a polynomial yet. It has c in the denominator. But we can clear all the denominators by multiplying everything by c to the fifth power. Then what you'll get is a to the fifth plus 3 b squared. Here you'll have c to the fifth minus c to the 5 minus 2, which is c cubed, minus 6 c to the fifth. And now this is a homogeneous polynomial. And so there's indeed a way to start with an affine curve. So this gives a way to turn an affine curve C instead of A2 into a projective curve. C prime instead of P2. So you can think of the following picture. So you have your P2, and there's some P1 here. And you have, this is A2, and you have your curve over here. So this is just an affine curve. It doesn't extend to P2. And now what you want to is to take the closure of this curve in some sense. So you want to add those points. So there's a canonical way to add these points. So it extends to a curve in P2. So this is C, and this dotted thing is C prime minus C. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So this will solve the problem that two lines which are parallel will now intersect at infinity in this P1. So now case 2, which was two parallel lines, is subsumed by 3. Because parallel lines now intersect. Now let me indicate some other problems. So now suppose you look at the intersection of the x-axis, so P is y, and Q will be some polynomial of the form y minus just a single polynomial r of x. So what is the intersection points of these two curves? So you want y to be 0, and you want r of x to be 0. So these are the intersection points. Now, in general, a polynomial can have different number of roots. So, for example, x squared plus 1 is never 0 over the reals. So there are no roots for x squared plus 1. But as you may know, x squared plus 1 does have roots over the complex numbers. And so this is what's known as an algebraically closed field. So let me briefly define what it is. So K, a field, is algebraically closed. If any polynomial r of x has a root over k. So for example, the complex numbers is an algebraically closed field. But the real numbers, as indicated here, it's not. And so if a polynomial has one root, it will have, so the number of roots in general will be equal to the degree of the polynomial. Okay. And so in this case, you know exactly the number of intersection points. The number of the intersection points will be the degree of the polynomial R if the field is algebraically closed. Okay, so from now on, I'm going to assume that the field is algebraically closed. Okay. So let's look again at this problem. So although you might have all the roots, some of the roots may be repeated. So if you have the polynomial r of x is x squared, then it has a double root. In this sense, we want to count roots with their multiplicity. And I want to explain how do you do that in general. So if you have two general curves, how do you count the intersection with the multiplicity? So suppose that we have just a circle and a line. So it intersects the circle at two points. But now if you move this line to the left, at some point it will hit this boundary and you'll just get a single point of intersection. So there are two intersection points, but here you just have one intersection point. In some sense, you want to say that this intersection point has two points in it. So you introduce the notion of intersection number. So here you have intersection number. Is 2. And here if you have a tangent line, then it's also going to be 2. So let me just heuristically say first what intersection number is. Okay. So I'll define this intersection number with I, P of two polynomials, P and Q. So P is some point. This is lowercase p, a point in A2. And P and Q are polynomials. Okay. So the idea for this intersection number is that if these two polynomials, if p is not a common solution to both of them, to p equals to 0 and q equals to 0, then this is just 0. There is no intersection. Then if there's an ordinary intersection, like here and here, each of them will have intersection number 1. So this is what I have here, ordinary intersection. And then 2 will correspond to a tangent line. And bigger than 2 is in some sense higher tangency. So you can think about not a double root, but a triple root at some point. And the intersection with the axis will have an intersection number 3 in that case. Okay, so let me define this intersection number more precisely. But for that, I'll need some abstract algebra. So if you don't know, you can just skip this definition. Okay. So let me first define power series ring So yk of xy with double brackets, I'll denote the power series ring, formal power series ring, which means that is the set of expressions of the form some number cmn times x to the m times y to the n, and you sum over mn. So mn are positive. And when I say formal power series, it just means that I don't care about convergence of this power series. So you might have arbitrary coefficient cmn. Okay, so this is the ring of formal power series. And now, if you look at this ring, k of xy, you can divide by a certain ideal. So you can look at the ideal generated by your polynomials P and Q. So this is ideal generated by P and Q. And now you take ring mod an ideal, you get some vector space over K. And so let me give a definition. Intersection number. So let me assume that P is actually the origin. So if P is not the origin, if the intersection point is not the origin, you can just shift everything to the origin, and you have to shift x and y. But for simplicity, let me just assume it's the origin. Then the intersection number of two polynomials is just the dimension of this vector space, formal power series mod an ideal generated by P and Q. So this is a vector space. Okay. So what does this actually mean, this dimension of this vector space? Well, informally you can say that the intersection number measures the number of independent functions F1 through FIP. Such that any power series is just some number times F1 plus another number times F2 and so on plus C IP FIP and plus some polynomials PQR plus P R S. So for some C1, C2, and so on, and R and S. Okay, so what this says is that you can write any power series as a linear combination of IP many fixed ones, and then any power series times P and plus any power series times Q. So let me try to give some examples of the computation. Maybe it will make this definition clearer. Okay. So the simple example would be to just try to intersect two lines, just the axis. If we intersect the axis, we expect the intersection number to be 1. So let's see whether we get that from this definition. So P will be Y and q will be x. So the intersection of these two curves is just the origin. Now we want to look at formal power series, the coefficients in x and y, mod the ideal generated by x and y. So any power series, so let's just look at the monomials. So from x and y, you can get any monomial that contains x or y. So for example, you can get x squared, you can get x to the 6, y to the 7, and so on. So any monomial that contains x or y, you can write as x times this monomial, x squared over x. For example, for x to the 6, y to the 7, you can write this as x times x to the 5th, y to the 7. So you can start with your x, and you can generate any monomial that contains x. Okay, so what's the number of independent functions that we need to add here? Well, the only function that we cannot get is the constant function. So the constant function doesn't have x or y. So this one is generated by the constant function. And so what is the space of constant functions? It's a one-dimensional space. So the intersection number in this case of y and x is 1. This is a dimension of the space of constant functions. Okay. Now, more complicated example. Let's try to look at the case when we have a tangent line somewhere. So let's say p is y, but q is x squared. Now, you can generate any monomial that has x squared, y to the 5th, and so on. So any monomial that has a power at least 2 for x and at least 1 for y. So which ones are left? Again, we need constants. This is a one-dimensional space, and x. So once you have x and constants, and this x squared and y, you can generate every power series. So you can get any monomial. So this is a one-dimensional space, and the space spanned by x is also one-dimensional. So the intersection number is 2, just as we expected, because on the picture here, well, let me actually do not x squared, but x squared minus y, then the picture will be a parabola and the x-axis. And at the origin, you see a double point. So here, the intersection number is 2. Okay. And let me give a final example, which might be counterintuitive, or at least you wouldn't know a priori how to compute the intersection number. So let's look at the case when p is y squared minus x squared, and q is y. So what's the picture here? So y squared minus x squared is 0. It's a set of two lines, y is x and y is minus x. So this is y is x, and this is y is minus x. So you have two lines. And y is 0 is the x-axis. So you have that. Okay, can anyone guess what's the intersection number at the origin for these two curves? Okay, anyone else?
Is it two?
Yes, it is two. So the only function that we need to add is x. So we need constants and x again. And it can generate everything else. Okay. Now I can state the Bezout theorem. By the way, Bezout theorem was proved in the end of the 18th century, so it's a pretty classical result. Okay, so suppose that we have let's first assume that K is an algebraically closed field. So for example, the complex numbers. And P and Q are homogeneous polynomials. Then the number of solutions let me say it in a different way. Okay. Let's just sum over all intersection points in the projective plane over all intersection numbers of P and Q. So you have P and Q, and you could sum over all intersection numbers. So this is a point of intersection. Then this sum will be the product of the degrees. Yeah. Thanks. So P and Q have no common factors. Otherwise, you'll have infinitely many intersection points. So let's look at some example for this theorem. Well, so if you have two lines, then the right-hand side will be 1 times 1. So there's a single intersection point. So that's what you have here. So that's what you would expect. And if you have some conic, so for example, a circle and a line, then the conic has degree 2 and the line has degree 1. So you expect two intersection points. So that's kind of a neat result. Okay, and let me give a quick application of that. It might seem completely useless. Who cares about the number of intersection points? But let's see a really cool result. So this application. So consider a cubic equation y squared is equal to x cubed plus alpha x plus beta for some numbers alpha and beta. So first of all, let me try to draw some of these. So if you have y squared is x cubed, then this will look like this. If you have y squared is x squared times x plus 1, then it will look like this. So this one has a special point at the origin. This one has a double point at the origin, so there's a self-intersection at the origin. And finally, a generic cubic. So these are kind of special cubics. And you see that they're special because the right-hand side, which is a cubic polynomial, here has a triple root, and here it has a double root. So let's look at some polynomial which doesn't have repeated roots. So y squared is x cubed plus x plus 1. Okay. So this one will look like this. It's symmetric around the x-axis. And there's a single real root. So you have this intersection point. OK, so what I want to do with this, let's try to look at the Bezout's theorem. So Bezout's theorem tells us that the number of intersection points of a cubic and a line is 3. So the degree of a cubic equation is 3, and degree of the linear equation is 1. So there are 3 intersection points once you count them with multiplicity. So before I discuss why do I need that, let me just talk about the same equation in the projective space. Let's try to make this polynomial into a homogeneous polynomial. So to make this into a homogeneous polynomial, let's use the usual procedure. Let's write it as b squared over c squared is equal to a cubed over c cubed plus alpha a over c plus beta. This is squared. And let's clear the denominators. So you get b squared times c is a cubed plus alpha a c squared plus beta c squared, beta c cubed. So this is the homogeneous equation. And, well, we know how this looks like, how the cubic looks like in A2. Now let's understand the points at infinity. So the points at infinity correspond to the point C being 0. So this is the set that we don't understand yet. So if C is 0, then all the sets are 0, which means that A is 0. OK, so we have points of the form 0, b, and 0. And since we can rescale b, this is just a single point. This is equivalent to 0, 1, 0. So there is a single point in infinity. OK, so let me call this point at infinity O. And let me define. So let me define a group law on this cubic curve. So I want to take two points, and I want to say how you can produce a third point out of those two points. So let's say you have two points. So you have 2 points. Here and here. Let's say they're A and B. And I want to draw a line between them. So here's a line. It will intersect at some other point, C. And then what I'm going to do, I'm going to reflect this point across the x-axis. So I'm going to reflect this point right here. So this is minus c. And so the group law on a cubic, you take a plus b. So let me call this minus c, c prime. So you define the sum of these two points, A and B, to be C prime. Okay, so if this is a group law, there should be an identity. So natural choice for the identity is this point at infinity. And if you take any point C, so you want to find the inverse to that point. So what is the inverse? So if you take point C and you take a point C prime, then this is the operation of inverse. So this is just a reflection along x. So why is this an inverse? Well, because the line, the vertical line, will intersect infinity at a single point. So this line intersects infinity. All other lines will not intersect infinity, will not intersect O, which is the point at infinity. So in this way, you can get a group law on any cubic without any structure whatsoever on the cubic, just from having this equation. Okay. And let me stop here.